I will call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum, and we don't have Representative Demmer, but we do have Representative Faust. Representative Faust. And this is House File 2813, which is down towards the end. And this works out well for him because he does not have a bill up in another committee.
Correct.
So, Representative Faust, we can't move your bill due to the fact that we don't yet have a quorum, but I bet we will before you get done. So why don't you go ahead and proceed?
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This bill is a pretty common sense bill. It's something that was probably just overlooked when they originally wrote these statutes. What's happened is that the School of North Branch is now, instead of having their own special ed is contracting through St. Croix River Education District, and because of that, kind of got hooked in the maximum effort provisions of the law. And so I have the executive director, is that what they call you now? Kim Gibbons, who will explain in better detail than I can the whole situation. So I'll turn it over to her, if that's all right, Madam Chair.
It's wonderful to have you here, Ms. Gibbons. And I just have to tell you as an aside that a legislator on the Tax Committee yesterday on the House floor gave me this report from a bunch of foundations of things that they thought should be looked at in the legislature for reducing costs of special ed. And they had all these new ideas on there that we should really take a look at, and one of them was RTI.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So welcome, and please re-identify yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Kim Gibbons, G-I-B-B-O-N-S. I'm the executive director of the St. Croix River Education District, which is located in Rush City, Minnesota. And prior to this school year, we had five school districts that belonged to our education district. We provided managed special education services for the district, among other things. And also, we provide staff. We hire school psychologists, school social workers, other itinerant special ed staff that go out to our member districts. This school year, the North Branch School District joined the education district. And when they joined the education district, they had three school psychologists that were employed in their district. Two school psychologists resigned, and we had an agreement that when school psychologists resigned, that the St. Croix River Ed District would take over the hiring of those positions. So we hired those two school psychologists. They were put on a Rush City contract because the Rush City School District is the host district for our education district. So North Branch has three school psychologists, the same as they did last year. But because the current maintenance of effort law for the Safe Schools levy requires that they spend the same amount of money from year to year, it doesn't recognize contracted services. So North Branch is now in violation of maintenance of effort because on the books they are showing that they are paying for one school psychologist, which is $65,000. And SCRED has hired the other two, which is a total of $131,000. So they're spending about the same amount of money, but the law isn't recognizing that they're contracting with SCRED for those additional two school psychologists, which is a problem.
Okay, very good. And Reps and Faust, we do now have a quorum, so I will move House File 2813 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right.
Questions from members? Or any testimony for or against the bill in the audience? And we are aware in this committee of what happened last night in the policy committee, but everything is always a new day in this committee.
Madam Chair, this may be a nice compromise to all of the bills affecting this issue.
We are into compromise. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, if the amendment that went on last night were to stay on, this would become a moot issue, right?
Representative McFarland, that's right.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
For those of us who aren't in the know, what happened in K-12 policy last night?
All right. Good question. For those of you who aren't on K-12 policy, and I wasn't actually there last night myself, when this happened, but apparently I'm told that the safe school levy maintenance of effort for school support staff was deleted, but the $3 dedication to the school support staff was maintained. Representative McFarland?
Madam Chair, I can explain a little bit more. If you look at line 2.13, anything past the first period was deleted.
Thank you, Representative McFarland, and I understand it was a Representative Benson amendment, wasn't it?
No.
Okay. Okay, it was Representative Obermueller, am I right? No, Representative McFarland, whose amendment was it? Representative Norton?
It was Obermueller.
It was originally Norton, then Obermueller.
Yeah, Obermueller.
Okay. Well, anyway, somehow it happened, and so if it should come back in this committee, anything can happen, then this is another modifier of that, and we appreciate having this alternative as well. Any testimony in the audience that I ask that? Nobody has any? No more questions? Closing statement, Representative Faust.
Like I said in the beginning, it's a very common sense thing. It's something that, like I say, probably was just skipped accidentally when they wrote the statute in the first place. And so I think it makes a lot of sense, and I hope it gets included in the omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Gibbons. And House File 2813 is laid over for possible inclusion. And now we have Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer, you're on the committee, so you can move your own bill. But while you're getting settled, I think we'll do the minutes, because we didn't have a quorum for that. Representative Slocum, the minutes of March 9th.
I move the minutes of March 9th.
Representative Slocum moves the minutes of March 9th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is House. I'd like to move House File 3219, I believe, for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 education finance bill.
Representative Demmer moves House File 3219. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We've seen these before, members. This is a request for a fund transfer for Hayfield High School, which is my alma mater. It's about three blocks from where I live. I've got with me today Superintendent Duran Evian, who can tell us about the request and why he feels the needs to transfer this. And again, it's to transfer from the capital reserve account to the general fund, $75,000.
Thank you very much, Representative Demmer. Superintendent Evian, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and tell us why you need this fund transfer. And Representative Demmer has probably told you this is the kind of fund transfer this committee likes, because it doesn't cost any money to enable you to do it, but we do go through this exercise because it is does need a special law for you to still tell us why you need it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Evian. I'm superintendent of schools for Hayfield Community Schools, District Number 203. I'm here today to request that we are allowed to transfer $75,000 from our capital reserve fund into our undesignated general fund. And the sheet that you should have in front of you by now, I put together just to give you a little reason as to why, and also some historical facts about where we've been and where we are at the present. I hate it when somebody hands out a brochure to me and then I read it to them, or it's read to me. So I'm not going to insult your intelligence. If you would like to take just a minute to look it over, I tried to keep it as short as possible. It's a simple request, and then I would be willing to entertain any questions or explain further.
And Mr. Evian, I am looking at it, and I appreciate your style, and that you're borrowing the money, kind of like the state is borrowing from school districts, which we don't like, but we're doing, or apparently it's being done. But you are planning to pay it back after you've had your cash flow to work out again, and so I think that's very to be commended as well. And what is, but we always asked, we want to make sure that the buildings are being maintained and that there isn't anything going to want as long as you have this money and aren't using it for operating capital. So could you address that, please?
I can. This is my sixth year as superintendent, and we have done many improvements since we've gotten ourselves out of statutory operating debt to get caught up. So we feel that our buildings and our maintenance are in good shape at this time. You could never tell when a roof is going to leak. But we currently have enough money in there, even after borrowing this, to take care of our roof needs. We also built a track here 4 years ago with the assumption that we would pay it back in 5 years, and we are on our fifth year next year, and we will have paid all of that money back that we did spend. So that's kind of been our goal. If we're going to spend a large amount of money, in this case it was $250,000 to redo our track, we spent 5 years paying it back into this fund to replenish it, and we just go without on a few other things. But that's the attitude we've used, and it would be the same with this $75,000. Getting to the reason why we need it, it's cash flow. We just borrowed at our board meeting yesterday $720,000 to meet our June payroll, because cash flow is killing us right now, as you're well aware of. So this $75,000 gives us a little cushion. It's 1% of our budget, and quite frankly, my board asked me to think outside the box. We have declining enrollment, as you can see. We have no state aid money coming in that we're aware of. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out there's only a few ways to get money, and this is the best I came up with. And it's not a lot of money, but to us it is. We're a small district. So
thank you. And you're saying in a very nice way that it's our fault, and I am guessing we all agree with you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, of course, support the request, but I'd just like to suggest that when our mandate reduction proposal comes before the committee, which I think would resolve this problem for all school districts, I will be looking forward to Representative Demmer's support.
Thank you very much. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, I think you would probably accurately predict that I would be supporting that sort of thing. I like to give, as you know, I like to give locally elected boards as much leverage and leeway as they can get. So I'm aware of your bill. I appreciate that, and I'm pretty sure I'll be supporting that. But I'll say pretty sure, just to leave a little gap of room for me.
A little intrigue for Representative Benson. And Superintendent Evian, you're lucky that you have Representative Demmer up there with you, because he's the one that usually asks all the hard questions on this committee.
Thanks for the heads up.
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, I thank you for mentioning that. I did talk to Ron when he came down, and I said, here's the question I usually ask is, and I asked him this actually on the phone when I called him and when we talked about it, and I said, I can tell you the question I always ask, and it's, okay, this is one-time money. You're going to put this in. What are you going to do for next year? And he said, we're planning to put this back and pay it back. And I said, thank you. That's all I needed to know. Mm-hmm. And so, but thanks for the plug, I think.
I think it was. Yeah. I personally think hard questions are what we should do here. So, any other questions from members? Any testimony for or against from the audience? Closing statement, Representative Demmer.
Enough said, Madam Chair. I just renew my motion.
Representative Demmer renews his motion that House File 3219 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you, Superintendent Evian, for driving up.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo. And we're going to have members, Representative Garofalo, present his bill, and we also have in our packet a handout from Mr. Strom that I'm going to ask you when you get up there, Representative Garofalo, when you would like Mr. Strom to go through to highlight this handout. But first, why don't you move your bill and then give me your advice.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, is this? I got an email saying that this needs to go to taxes. Does our omnibus bill go to taxes or not?
Representative Garofalo, the tax committee is asking for tons of our bills, and our answer is you're getting our omnibus bill.
Okay,
so we're not going to have people have to go hither and yon.
Well, Madam Chair, then I will move House File 3303 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Garofalo moves House File 3303 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Garofalo, what
Madam Chair,
when would you like
Mr. Strom make his comments right now?
And so I didn't hear what you said, Representative Garofalo.
Let's have Mr. Strom go ahead and make his comments, because I don't know what he's going to say.
Right at this moment. Okay, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, I'll direct your attention to three things. If you want a more complete description of taconite revenue in the blue school finance guide that's in all your folders, starting on page 98, there's about three pages of information about the different taconite aid programs as they affect school districts. Secondly, The overview of the bill summary provides a fair discussion of the taconite change that happened last year, and I'm going to use the single sheet landscape-style spreadsheet to talk about what this change means in terms of dollars and cents. In general, Madam Chair and members, the taconite industry is exempt from property tax and instead is subject to a series of other taxes, primarily a production tax, which is based on the tonnage of taconite that's mined each year. The taconite revenues are distributed through a variety of formulas, and several of those formulas impact school districts. The one that is being mentioned in Representative Garofalo's bill is distribution of the production tax to school districts as essentially an in lieu of payment for property tax. And that formula has been in place for a fair number of years. And for most of the last 30 years or so, the way that formula has worked is some of the reduction has been to a school district's levy, and the rest has been to that school district's state aid. And the reason for this is, again, back to the taconite being a payment that's like an in lieu of payment for property tax. Because the taconite industry isn't subject to property tax, that property is excluded from the values of those school districts. So those school districts are relatively more property poor than they would otherwise be. So the way the formula worked, the production tax revenue, a certain number of cents per ton of that revenue is set aside for this purpose, and first a levy reduction takes place. And if you look at the spreadsheet that's in front of you, you can see for the districts, the two dozen districts that are in the taconite relief area, you can see at the bottom of that spreadsheet the levy reductions that have happened over the last 6-7 years. And you can see those have been relatively consistent from year to year. And what this essentially does is it takes that taconite revenue and it reduces the other school levy of the property tax levy of the school districts and essentially acts as a tax-based replacement for the districts. You can see across for each of the districts listed, and about $8 million in total is paid from that that portion of the fund to reduce the local school levies. The remainder of that, up prior to the change last session, was then offset against state aids. So first the levy reduction happens, and then if there's production tax remaining, a general education aid reduction occurred. And the rationale behind that aid reduction was if the school districts were more property wealthy, that is, if this taconite revenue had been, or taconite industries had been included in property tax, the school districts would have had higher tax base and thus been subject to less equalization aid. So the reductions in general education aid are listed, and you can see the totals there have been declining since fiscal year 2006. And you can see in the current fiscal year, we actually don't expect any aid reduction to occur. And this is because the production tax, the mining, the tons that have been mined has gone down, and so that only the levy share is actually being raised. In fiscal year 11, you can see a very small amount of aid reduction is scheduled. And for 11, 12, and 13 under this spreadsheet, they show what would happen if that aid reduction were returned to the general education formula. But the change that was made last year takes that amount, that $28,000 in fiscal year 11, the $141,000 in fiscal year 12, and the $1.5 million in fiscal year 13, and instead uses that as payments to cities and towns that are within the taconite relief area. So the result of the change was that the levy share stayed the same. School district levies are unaffected. But on the aid share, the change last year in 2009 essentially had those amounts that otherwise would have been offset against general education aid redirected to the cities and towns that are within the taconite relief area. So, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's a real quick explanation of the way the taconite production tax is treated for school purposes and the effect of last year's action as well as House File 3303.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And I have to say I'm glad that Representative Garofalo brought this bill forward because the way this was changed last year was in the tax committee, and we never liked the other committees doing the K-12 work. Representative Kahn has sent us some parts of her bill that somehow from the governor's bill got sent to state government, and now they're before us later on today and so forth. But the tax committee has still not gotten the idea. Representative Marquardt is here, and Representative Anzels that can help us with this. When we are doing education finance issues, we like them to be done in the education committee because we know all the issues and how it affects the other school districts, and always when you have something that affects one or a group of school districts. That sounds good always to all of us because we're all for students, but we have to look at the big picture in this committee. So, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, first of all, let me start by apologizing. I am a member who prides himself on reading legislation and on finding things. And when this omnibus tax bill was brought to us last year, we were told that this was a that the non-controversial items were removed from that bill and that it was a consensus items. And I read through the bill and I got down to just about the end of it, to the last article, and I just ran out of time. I stopped reading it. And sure enough, in that bill, at the end of that, towards the last article, was this provision, which you've heard Mr. Strom's explanation of it. Let me just speak legislator for a second, and that is the chairman, the tax chairman of the Senate, used the education appropriation to provide a backdoor LGA increase to cities. That's what he did. And it didn't come through our committee, didn't go through the tax committee in the House side. They used the education budget to provide an LGA increase. And we shouldn't do it, and I want it repealed. And that's my bill.
I like it that you're so concise, too.
That's right.
Representative Van Zels, I'm guessing we have a little discussion in this committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. my first question is, can you name for me one school superintendent north of University Avenue who supports your legislation?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Zels, University Avenue, is that what you said, north of St. Paul? I have not solicited nor sought feedback from any superintendent in the state, but I can tell you that the superintendents that I've met, that I represent in my district, they like seeing education dollars used to educate kids, not provide LGA increases to certain select cities based on the geography of the tax committee chair.
Representative Van Zels.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, you do understand that the $2.31 per ton of taconite that the mining companies pay is in lieu of property taxes, and that those proceeds, in the purest sense, would otherwise have gone to the recipients of property taxes, which are townships, municipalities, counties, and school districts. And so, what effect would this have on the long-range ups and cyclical ups and downs in the iron and steel economy, where production goes up and production goes down, and the proceeds from the production tax in lieu of property taxes affects our local units of government?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Zels, there's no doubt that as production declines, this will provide less revenue to the cities that that taconite assistance district. And as it goes up, under current law, it would provide more money to them. My dispute is not with LGA or with the funds or lack of funds that those communities receive. What I am opposed to is the education finance appropriation being used to provide an LGA increase. If I came to this committee or the tax committee and suggested that we increase the LGA appropriation to provide increase the education appropriation to provide more funds to Farmington or Lakeville, I would be laughed out of the legislature. I would be absolutely laughed out of here. And the fact that this provision came in without any discussion of this committee, and I serve on the tax committee, I didn't hear any discussion about it there. This was presented to the members of this body as a non-controversial provision, and I will tell my good friend that this is a controversial provision. Taking the LGA appropriation at a time when everyone's taking the education appropriation and using it to provide an LGA increase, I ain't cool with that. And we can certainly go round and round about the value of the LGA formula. I think we would all agree we should not be using the education funding formula to do that.
Representative Van Zels.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we are good friends.
Yes.
I want a comment and one last question. I would also suggest to the committee that it would be equally laughable, if one of you or a member of the Iron Range delegation introduced legislation and was given a hearing to reconfigure Bloomington's property tax proceeds or St. Paul's property tax proceeds. Because what we're talking about are taconite production taxes, which are in lieu of, in place of, property taxes. And my last question is, Representative, do you know of any mayor north of University Avenue who supports your legislation?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Ansells, I have not polled mayors in my district or anywhere else in the state to find out their opinions, but I would say that most officials would say that we should not be using the education funding appropriation to provide LGA increases. I think I haven't polled them on it. That's not scientific. It's an opinion, not a fact. But to my friend, I just don't think that I don't think there'd be a lot of support for that.
Any other questions or comments from members? Any testimony for or against in the audience? Hearing none, Representative Garofalo, any more words or to conclude with?
Well, again, Madam Chair, and I am serious about this, I do want to apologize because I pride myself on understanding when, as the lead Republican on this committee, it's my responsibility to track education funding issues, and I can assure you that had I completed that final article of that bill, we would have heard a lot more about this on the House floor last year, and I suspect we're going to hear more about it this year. It's just another example of we just have to be a little bit more vigilant and keep an eye out for things. So that's my closing comments, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate the hearing. I look forward to more discussion on this matter.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. And House File 3303 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Simon is bright and early. Welcome. Representative Simon, do you want me to move your bill, or did you ask a member to do
it? Please, if you would.
I would move then House File 3342 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill grew out of an experience that we had in St. Louis Park, but we're like a lot of districts where we're having to downsize and economize, and just recently the St. Louis Park School Board decided that we had to close one of our elementary schools, Cedar Manor Elementary School on Cedar Lake Road in St. Louis Park. And that's just something that had to be done, but in talking with school board members and administrators, one of their frustrations was that it costs money. There are certain costs associated with closing a school, and although it's meant as a cost savings measure, there are costs, moving costs, packaging costs, and in St. Louis Park, while they don't have the final numbers yet and won't until later this spring, they're estimating that the costs of actually closing the school will come out to somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000. That's the best current estimate, although it's not a final estimate. And their thought was, well, wouldn't it be better if we could count that as a capital expense rather than having it as part of their general fund or operating dollars? So all that this bill does is add to the already long list of expenses that are permissible for uses of operating capital revenue. It adds this. It says that these monies can be used to pay costs directly associated with closing a school facility, including moving and storage costs. That's the bill, members. In talking to some of you on this committee, it seems to be something that you thought was a good idea. You're the experts, not me. I don't serve on this committee or on the Education Policy Committee, but this is an idea that came from St. Louis Park that seems like it would help, at least at the margins, some districts to do what they have to do. So I urge your support. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Questions? Testimony? Anything more to add?
I don't. I just...
Thanks.
Look forward to your consideration. Thanks.
Thank you. House File 3342 is laid over for possible inclusion. Let's see. Is it Rep. Mariani for the next one? Okay. The next one, House File 3163, is Representative Mariani's bill. Rep. Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And of course, we can't make motions because we don't have possession of the bill in this committee, but I think it is important for the committee to look quickly through some of the finance sections that are in this otherwise MDE policy bill. Madam Chair, it might be wise to have the department to come up and answer questions relative to those. And Madam Chair, I believe committee staff have identified the sections that are clearly policy sections. Obviously, all of Article 1, Article 2, Section 7 and 8, 11, 15, and Article 3, Section 2. I may have missed one, but I believe those are the directly purely finance issues that are properly before this committee. And once we move the bill formally, no doubt this committee will properly dig its teeth into those sections. So,
okay.
Probably good to have the department come down and answer questions and explain bill, what they're doing with those.
This bill is officially in the policy committee, so we won't be moving it, nor will we move any amendments. But this is for information, so we can move expediently when we do have the bill before us when we mark up the bill. So, we have Mr. Melcher first. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. Article 1, Sections 1 through 4 are technical amendments. Article 1 is a clarification that the interest that is earned on earnings from the Permanent School Fund while it's awaiting transfer to the Department of Education is included in the transfer that will ultimately be paid to school districts. It reflects current Minnesota management and budget practice, and this just ensures that the money gets to the school districts, that they're properly credited with the interest on the interest, so to speak. Article 1, Sections 2 and 4 are technical clarifications on legislation that was enacted last year that deals with the pay-as-you-go OPEB levy, other post-employment benefits levy. We discovered some technical glitches in the language at the last minute during the session last year. They were included in the technical corrections bill, but unfortunately the clock ran out before they could be enacted this last year. We believe they're non-controversial. What Section 2 does is to correct a cross-reference to clarify that the OPEB levy is not early recognized. And Section 4 clarifies the definition of the expenses that are included, and those are the actual expenses for post-employment benefits in the previous fiscal year. Article 1, Section 3 deals with the definitions of general education revenue that are used for calculating special education excess cost. And what this is doing is striking obsolete language relating to referendum levies, which is no longer used, and also providing a separate definition for the general education revenue for charter schools, which reflects the current department practice in terms of calculating this particular aid. In the past, we've only defined general education revenue for school districts, and we've kind of read between the lines in order to get the equivalent components of revenue for charter schools. But because the charter schools are paid under a separate statute, this is cross-referencing the proper statutes. Article 1, Section 5 is the one piece in Article 1 that is a significant policy change, and this one would eliminate the maintenance of effort provision relating to school licensed support staff, counselors, social workers, psychologists, and so forth. And the department is recommending that maintenance of effort provision be repealed. That's Article 1.
Article 1. Any questions on Article 1? Okay, thank you, Dr. Melcher. Who is next? Amy Ralstein and Ms. Lisa Barnage. What about him? He's not coming.
Good afternoon. Lisa Barnage and I are going to be speaking about Article 2, Sections 7 and 8. Section 7 amends Minnesota Statutes 124D.091 sub 2 by adding language that allows school districts to receive aid for the cost of providing secondary courses at the high school for technical courses within a recognized career and technical education program of study approved by the Commissioner of Education and Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Expanding the eligibility for concurrent enrollment aid to include concurrent enrollment programs offered through state-recognized programs of study makes these opportunities available to more students without a fiscal impact. The reason that it does not have a fiscal impact is because the proposal expands the eligibility requirements within the current appropriation. The current appropriation is $2 million, and it is prorated among the different programs. The reason we're recommending this is that it would promote programming for a different set of students that is currently supported, and it's those students whose expertise is in technical fields.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Barnage with the Department of Education. And on Section 8 of the bill, also about concurrent enrollment, this is actually kind of more of a technical, clarifying portion of the bill to say, and right now it says that we would reimburse 150, and it actually is due to the capped appropriation. And as Amy was just saying, in the appropriation language, we are directed to prorate, so we aren't able currently able to pay the 150 due to the high enrollment in these programs. So we ask that we just make it clarified that it's up to 150 instead of just the flat 150.
Okay. Ms. Wallstein. Oh, there was a, I'm sorry. Representative Brown had a question, Ms. Wallstein. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not familiar with the term twice exceptional.
Ms. Wallstein.
I'm not familiar with the term twice exceptional on page 6.2.
Chair, that's
Mr. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I don't know what that means either, but however, that falls under a policy consideration. It's certainly appropriate to ask the question here, but you can bet we'll be vetting that issue tomorrow when we hear the bill and policies.
Okay, thank you. Does that help, Representative Brown? I know you're not on policy, so but Representative Mariani has promised to cover it in the policy committee, and if it doesn't get resolved there, then we can ask it again when we come through
Madam
the
Chair.
Bill. Okay, thank you.
And I don't have an answer for it because I don't know what that means either.
But we're sure you're going to find out. All right, Mr. Hartman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is David Hartman from the Minnesota Department of Education. I'll be talking about Article 2, Section 11. This is a new provision regarding the replication of highly performing charter schools. And what it does is it allows the commissioner to approve up to 5 charter schools or models that are highly effective practices to improve student academic growth and proficiency in reading and math. It serves as an incentive for these highly performing schools to replicate their success and qualifies them to earn up to $150,000 per year of federal startup funds. The existing law only allows for site expansions, and site expansions under the current state law are not eligible for federal startup funds. Charter schools have expressed interest in replicating their charter schools. A couple of these are Community Peace Academy in St. Paul and KIPP, Minnesota, in Minneapolis. and this section would improve the climate and encourage charter schools to replicate success.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last year we passed what was called the autonomous schools legislation, which became part of the law. Would those kinds of charter schools within the public school system be eligible or be considered part of this initiative?
Mr. Hartman.
Excuse me, I missed the title of the...
Autonomous schools. It was legislation that was...
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was legislation that was passed last year, which the governor signed. It was supported by the Department of Education. They considered it an important initiative. I'm just wondering whether those schools, if they were organized as North High School wished to at one point, if they are part of this initiative or would be considered eligible to be part of that initiative.
Representative Mariani.
Well, perhaps you can answer the question. And I did.
Oh, you want to follow on after him. Okay, Mr. Hartman. And self-governed schools.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. No, this is limited to charter schools. And replication, there, it allows for the replication of highly effective models, but it is limited to the charter school law and is not the self-governed school provision.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to discuss that further, but presently it wouldn't be useful, I suspect. But if we pass legislation which could make a difference in the public schools, I'd like to see that the law actually be implemented and have this division between the public schools for innovation. And the notion seems to be that only a charter school could be innovative, and I wouldn't agree with that.
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, members. Thank you. What this does is it allows for the federal government, federal charter school grant program, that these schools would qualify for them. It doesn't limit perhaps who or what schools or school districts could innovate, but it allows for charter schools to receive that funding. And currently, as a charter school expands, the federal government has let us know that those expansions do not qualify for that particular grant funding.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out, along with that brief discussion of access to federal funds, on line 14, we've got language that says charter schools approved under subdivision will be eligible to receive state charter school startup aid. And so I think the Finance Committee would want to look carefully at what's in the pot in terms of that aid, and coordinating with the Policy Committee to decide whether or not it wants to spread that out to these new animals as well.
Thank you, Representative Mariani and Representative Benson. When we do have this bill in front of us, you know, there's opportunity to amend it as well. And so I would ask Mr. Hartman in a minute.
Okay.
So, Mr. Hartman, if Representative Benson were to amend in site-governed schools to receive the startup aid, what would be the position of the department on that?
Well, the position of the department, I think, would be more contingent upon how the federal U.S. Department of Education looks at these startup funds. And currently, to the best of my knowledge, non-charter schools do not qualify for these startup funds. And so what we're looking to do is to incent good ideas and highly effective schools to replicate their practices. And it's not limited to the ideas of high-quality charter schools. So if a North High School had a model that was worthy of replication and could demonstrate high quality, then perhaps a charter could be applied for, and there could be multiple sites that would be replicated.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, I just have a couple of questions regarding Article 1 and Article 2, and then just one comment. The first question that I have is under Article 2, Section 2, statewide testing, where it says require schools and school districts and charter schools to place on students' transcripts of students, and then you can read on. Could you just tell me what position person does that at a school?
Mr. Hartman. Actually, that Mr. Representative Tilbury, I think he was only giving us the sections on charter schools. So,
well, if I look at the charter school, Madam Chair, and I look under even the requires charter school under the Article 4, Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4, it looks like a lot of work that would be done by social workers, possibly. And I'm just curious, as this particular document is loaded with new mandates of things that is eliminated by parts in the Safe Schools levy, I notice. And I find that quite interesting. And if I was to put this in terms of what we did in maybe even wildlife when something was extinct or going to extinction, we didn't necessarily add to it and make it more extinct. That's the comment I had to make.
All right, and Ms. Barnage is up there who maybe can answer your first question. Ms. Barnage.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, could you please repeat the first article, but I believe it was on the grad assessment?
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, it would be Article 2, Section 2 under the statewide testing, if you notice. It's requiring schools to record on transcripts, whether it passes in the status of graduation assessments, and I can tell you how much time that takes.
Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, this actually was language that was included last year, and we were just asking that it be modified due to some issues that we became aware of after the fact. But I would have to maybe ask the school boards or the school board administrators who actually does that at the schools. I would assume perhaps it would be someone in the office.
Madam Chair.
Representative Tilbury.
School board administrators do this. Who do they pass it on to?
Ms. Barnage.
Representative Tilbury, I think I would believe it would be happened with someone in the office at the school.
Can I help that situation, Madam Chair? It is given to counselors, it's given to social workers, psychologists, and so on to do the work behind this.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I think that comments not only are on the section, Article 2, Section 2, but on the maintenance of effort, obviously, which we'll be discussing more in this committee. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm not mistaken, Madam Chair, I think we're just changing it to having to post a score to saying it's either pass or fail. Isn't it just kind of making it easier?
Ms. Barnage.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, it's making it, it wouldn't change actually the current level of work that was last year. You would look at the number that the child got and say that that's pass or fail.
Okay. Any other questions from members to date on the articles that we've been through? I know we have one request from Jan Alsweiger to testify on the charter school section, so I think that this would be a good spot for that. Ms. Alsweiger.
Madam Chair, would you like us to finish the other sections that pertain to your committee?
There's a couple more sections.
We could finish. I was going to take it as long as we just finished the charter school section. But if it's Chair Mariani's desire to go through the whole bill before we take any testimony, that is fine too. Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, you should always strike when the iron is warm, and the iron is warm on this issue, so I think it's appropriate to ask someone to come forward.
Very good. Ms. Alsweiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. And I'm just going to ask you some questions for you to think about. This might be a fine model for replicating charter schools, but you remember that last year you passed legislation and it was signed into law to require or provide for three single-purpose charter school organizations, and they can then be an authorizer to form multiple charter schools. So now we have another model that is going to be creating a number of charter schools as well. And in the times of budget deficit, I just ask you to think about what it does to your local school district if a charter starts in your district. Does it mean that one of your elementary schools will have to close because of the change in enrollment? Does it mean that staff are going to be laid off? Certainly, probably other staff will be hired in a charter school. That's true, too. But I ask you to think about what we're doing to our own school districts that are trying to become more and more efficient. You might have a charter, you might have a public school district that says that we have to cut $5 million. And as a result, they decide to close the school. And when they decide to close the school, that is a prime market for a charter school to start up. And so the charter school possibly will take some of those kids that were in that elementary building. And so now that public school, again, has a problem with efficiencies and may have to close another school or do some major restructuring, boundaries, whatever. We have been expanding charter schools at a very rapid rate. There are some very good charter schools, and we all know there are some that are not very good. And when, every time I testify in charter schools, I say, when is the state thoroughly going to ask for accountability to study charter schools to make sure that we are doing right by our kids?
Thank you, Ms. Allsweiger. Representative Mariani, what is next?
Madam Chair, let me just point out that on page 20, it's not really a finance issue, but it's a financial management issue, and I think it's important for the committee to know that mine's 1 and 2, the department is asking that entities that provide professional services to charter schools must provide information about the financial audit to the commissioner upon request. We kind of scratch our heads in this, but I think it's probably a good idea. And if you have a charter school that isn't providing their financial audit, I mean, that tells you that's definitely a red flag. But nonetheless, it's still important for the commissioner to be able to access that information. And apparently in law right now, they can't do that any other way except to ask for the directly from the charter school. So this would provide the ability for the auditor to respond, because many of them, of course, are private, and, you know, to be directed by us to respond to the commissioner positively. And then, Madam Chair, Section 15 on page 22 is also a small issue, but it is related to state aid. And currently, state aid can be withheld in proportion to the numbers of teachers that are unlicensed teachers in a district, and the department is suggesting that that be change to reduce. I don't know if that has any kind of impact on the finances, but it's probably an appropriate question to ask the department.
Very good. Dr. Melch?
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, the sections 14 and 15 are actually related. Both of them deal with reduction of aid for school districts or charter schools that have violated the law. And in section 14, what we're asking to be done on lines 9 and 10, page 22, is to reinstate some language that was inadvertently stricken in 2001 when the Ventura administration had some larger scale changes proposed in this law. This was inadvertently repealed, and it kind of took away the clarity as to when do we use 127A42 and when do we use 127A43. So this would reinstate language that was inadvertently repealed, which basically says if it's a violation of teacher licensing, then we use 127A43. If it's a violation in one of the other areas, we use 127A43. 42, and that became an issue as we dealt with the things that came up with the TESA charter school as it related to unlicensed teachers. So that's part of the reason why it's kind of coming to our attention at this time. And 127A43 in section 15, historically when this law was written, we used the term withheld to mean permanently taken away. Now we've kind of distinguished and said if we're withholding, that's temporary, and if we're reducing, that's permanent. And I think what the original intent of this was, if you have non-licensed teachers, that was a permanent reduction in your state aid. You didn't get the money back. And so this is changing the word from withheld to reduced to reflect what we believe the original intent was and the way it's been used in the past.
To make it permanent. Okay. Questions from members on this section? Reps Mariani.
Madam Chair, the only other section that that I'm aware of, but I may be wrong, and I believe, by the way, Article 4 will be vetted in Representative Slawick's Finance Committee. But in Article 3, we have Section 2, the use of reimbursements, accessing third-party payments for individualized education programs.
Ms. Farnage.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is actually a clarification of what the revenue that school districts get for third-party billing, what it can be used for, and one of those things is for training to learn how to better access third-party billing to receive more payments, as well as in paragraph or number 3, we're just trying to correct that we try to refer to children with special needs or with disabilities as children with IEPs throughout the statute. So fairly technical there as well.
Good, and that's kind of a lead-in for a bill we have coming up, Representative Morgan's bill, so I'm sure you're aware of that as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I guess we're at the end of the sections that apply to Ed Finance. Any other questions from members? Representative McFarland, and then I'll see if there's any testimony.
Madam Chair, there were two amendments in the package, or it was for another bill?
We're going to get to those, but I'm going to just take the testimony first if there's any. Thanks. Staff is reminding me of those, too. I needed reminding, Representative McFarland, because I was going to adjourn without them. Any testimony other than what we've heard from the audience? Okay, then the amendments, Representative Mariani. We have two amendments in our packet. Are those yours or the department's?
They're the department's, Madam Chair, so I would ask.
Okay.
This is the
A10. Okay. A10-2204 is Dr. Melcher to speak to. That one is from the department. And again, we're not going to move these because we do not have the bill before us. Thank you. Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The first section in the amendment is adding the words "an unsecured" to a line of credit. The lines of credit are currently unsecured. This is a clarification. This applies to school district line of credit borrowing. We have had some inquiries from banks as to whether if a school district doesn't pay back a line of credit, can they come to the Department of Education and have the Department of Education pay the bank directly if the school district agrees to assign the state aid payments to the bank. And we don't think it's good practice for the Department of Education to be paying banks directly. That's between the bank and the school district, and so we just wanted to clarify that this was an unsecured piece. I did discuss this with Mr. Deans, and he agreed that this was currently the way this is being treated.
Okay.
On the second part of the amendment, dealing with a similar sort of issue, and this deals with both charter schools and school districts, just again to clarify that except where otherwise specifically authorized, state education aid payments are made only to the education organizations earning state aid revenues as a result of providing services. In other words, we don't want to be in the business of having state aid payments to school districts or charter schools assigned to a bank or another type of lender and having the State Department of Education be in the business of paying banks or others trying to figure out whether they're the appropriate recipient of the dollars. We think we should be paying the aids to the school district or the charter school. We think we may need to amend this language to clarify that
charter schools are in fact affected, because typically if we don't mention the word charter school in the law and it's not in 124D10, then it doesn't apply. So we're thinking we may need to probably come back and clean this up, because we did intend for this to apply both to charter schools and school districts. The third piece of the amendment is one that we've heard some concerns about from the charter school community, and we think we may need to pull this. This was, again, related to this issue of pledging or assigning state aids to a lender or creditor. We think that we take care of this issue with the second section, which says we only pay school districts and charter schools. We don't pay banks or charter school capital or other kinds of entities. So we think that eventually when you deal with this, that we would withdraw this part of the amendment.
So now we have this before us, members, in case we add this to our bill. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Dr. Muncher, so is this just the charter schools are trying to find lower interest rates to compete with the revenue anticipation notes that school districts are doing? Is that where this is coming from?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I think this is coming from kind of a environment in which banks are asking for more security in terms of borrowing, both to school districts and charter schools, and in some cases have asked to have the school district or the charter school assign their future state aid payments to the bank instead of paying the school district and having them take care of their finances. We would be in a position where we could conceivably be paying the bank if the charter school didn't pay its loan off on time or if the school district didn't. So it's more a matter of creditworthiness and who's first in line if a school district or a charter school doesn't pay its debts on time. And from our perspective, we don't think that the state should be involved in disputes between a school district or charter school and a lender. Those should be resolved between them, and this is intended by on our part to have us pay the school district or charter school that earned the money because they educated kids, and then let the lenders deal with that in another manner.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it's not my intent as the chair of the policy committee to either adopt or reject these amendments in our policy committee. I think that's a discussion that's best held here. We may have a bit of a discussion, though, because obviously under the environment in which we're operating, there's economic stress on both charters and regular public schools, and so there's a heavier expectation, if you will, of these entities to do short-term borrowing that perhaps they're not accustomed to or haven't done in the recent past. And so I think it's important to get a feel for, how the combination of this proposal as well as the current context may or may not affect the viability of our public schools. But I will not be acting on this amendment in the policy committee.
And obviously, as always, our committees are intertwined, because policy that's worth a lot is worth a lot of money often, and if it's a small thing, it still might be some money involved. So, okay, we have one other amendment in our packet, the A5 amendment, and Christy Swanson from Management and Budget will tell us about this one. And this is the one, members, that Representative Pond recognized was really an education matter, so we'll be dealing with this in our committee, and we hope the tax committee is taking note. Welcome, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Christy Swanson. I'm a budget officer for Minnesota Management and Budget, and this language just simply changes shall to may in the statute that requires Minnesota Management and Budget to delay payments to school districts prior to being able to short-term borrow. This suggestion is just to keep the tool available for future administration should the state face future short-term borrowing or cash flow shortages, but it makes the language permissive instead of mandatory.
Thank you very much. And this is a light version of the bill that I'm carrying that some of you have signed on to that deals with the same topic. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Swanson. Anything final, Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, look forward to presenting the full version of this bill next week.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think next week, maybe the following. I can't quite remember.
I think we have to be done in the next week or two, whatever. The weather's so bad today, we're having trouble remembering these things. If there's nothing else, members, this meeting is adjourned.